Wisdom there. Well, good morning again. My name's Keith, one of the leaders around here. And as I prepared for this Easter message, and I've done many Easter messages before, I just sat down and reread the story and said, God, what new thing can I say this year? I mean, I'm fairly familiar with these passages, with these stories. But one passage from one of the Easter stories, it really just stopped me in my tracks this week. And it really impacted me. It's a lesser-known story from that Easter Sunday. It's in the Gospel of Luke. And it doesn't happen at the beginning of Easter Sunday. It actually comes at the end of the day. And we're going to look at this encounter that two folks had with Jesus that first Easter. And we're going to learn a lot about hope. And for the two people in this story, hope seems to come late. Hope seems to come late. Maybe you've come here today discouraged. Maybe your life hasn't gone the way you'd hoped it would go. Maybe you're hoping to be married, yet you're still single. Maybe you're hoping your marriage would be strong, but in fact, it's unraveling. It might even be falling apart. Maybe you're hoping your job would take off, but now you feel stuck, or maybe you're out of work. Maybe it's an unexpected illness. You had this great health for so many years, yet recently your health has fallen apart. Or maybe you're hoping for more time with a loved one. Maybe they were even here last Easter, but they're not here today. And because of that, there's a huge hole in your life. And maybe you come here today with a little less hope than you used to have. Maybe your hope in life has been challenged, and I want to say I'm glad you're here today. You've come to the right place because this morning we're going to read words of Jesus to two discouraged followers of his who were down and who had lost hope. This passage is found in chapter 24 of Luke's Gospel, so feel free to turn there if you have your Bibles, Luke chapter 24. Starting in verse 13. Here it goes. Now that same day, this is the first Easter Sunday. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and as they discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked alongside them. Pretty cool, huh? But they were kept from recognizing him. So very real interesting story here, right? These two members of this tiny little community of faith, this tiny community of people who've been following Jesus, they're not off on their own. We're going to find out in a moment, one of them is called Cleopas. Now in John's Gospel, chapter 19, we see that one of the women at the cross was Mary of Clopas. The wife of Clopas was at the cross when Jesus was crucified. And most scholars would say Cleopas and Clopas are likely the same person. Okay? In other words, it's most likely these two people on this road to Emmaus are a couple. They're a married couple, Cleopas and his wife, Mary, who witnessed the crucifixion of Jesus. She did. And so they're trying to come to grips with what had happened, right? They've been following Jesus. They had hoped in Jesus, but Mary was there. She saw the crucifixion. She saw Jesus die. And now they're wandering around because their hope, the hope they'd put in Jesus, their world, it had been shattered. And while they're walking along with their hope shattered, a stranger comes up and walks alongside them. And the Bible has this interesting phrase, but they were kept from recognizing him. And so this is Jesus walking alongside these two followers of his who've been scattered. But for some reason, they don't recognize him. And as I read this, by the way, I find it very interesting who Jesus shows up to post-resurrection. I mean, if I were Jesus and I just rose from the dead, the first person I would go to would be Caesar, the guy who's in charge of Rome. Because he says he's a god. I'd go to Caesar and say, can you do this, you know? Or I'd show up to Pilate, the governor who'd put Jesus, condemned him to death, right? I'd go to Pilate and go, hey, I'm back, right? Remember me. But he doesn't do that. It's amazing. It really is. Jesus first appears to Mary Magdalene, who in that society would have been an outcast. Then he appears to two scattered followers of his who've kind of left. He pursues them. I find it important to note that Jesus always seems to go out of his way to reach out to ordinary people, people who are often forgotten by others. It's a powerful thing we see in Jesus. And then verse 17, he asks them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? And this question he asks, what are you discussing? It kind of stops them in their tracks. It says, they stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked them, are you crazy? Have you not heard what happened? Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who doesn't know the things that have happened there in these days? Cleopas, he's spent. He's not trying to be polite. He's so overwhelmed by the events that have just happened at the crucifixion. He basically says, "What? You've been living under a rock or something? Don't you pay attention at all?" Now, of course, the stranger at this point is Jesus. Could have gotten off a nice zinger, right? Well, actually, yeah. I have heard of Jesus, you know? I'm actually Jesus. But he doesn't say those things. He kind of teases the conversation out. He says, "What things? Tell me, what things are you talking about?" And they tell him. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He's a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people." He's powerful, but then chief priests and our rulers handed him over, sentenced him to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped. We had hoped he would be the one. We had hoped. That's their story right there. They're telling their story. It's the story of their people, of Israel. The story of what they had hoped for. And the heart of their story is these moving words, "We hoped, but now, not so much." Right? And you and I have a story as well. And if you live long enough, you know those words too, right? You know those words too. "We've been hoping to raise a great family, have a long life together, and then the doctor said the cancer's really bad. I've been hoping, I had this great dream, and then I lost my job. I feel like a failure. I've been hoping I broke free from that dark thing, but then that destructive habit, it resurfaced, and I can't seem to shake its grip on me. I've been hoping we'd make a life together, but then she said she doesn't love me anymore. We've been hoping our family would turn out great, but then our kid, he ran down that road. We never thought he'd go down. We've been hoping he was the one who would redeem our people, the rescuer who's going to make our story come out okay. But now he's dead, died on a cross, and our story's gone all wrong." You see, this passage spoke to me so much this week because the story of Cleopas and his wife, their story of lost hope, it resonates so much with me at times in my story, and I think likely your story. You got to understand their story. They're part of this people called Israel who had a destiny, who had a calling. And being part of the people of Israel meant that their life was so much more than just about themselves. It was about following and serving this amazing God. In addition to following this amazing God, they were to be his representatives here on earth. They were to bring hope to the world. They thought, "We're the ones who bring hope." Their story is one of hope. But their story had gone wrong over and over again in their minds. Their country, the people of Israel, they were suffering. And they'd been suffering for a long time. Their people had been in exile in Egypt where they were slaves. Then after they escaped, their history was filled with oppression, with one oppressor after another, oppressor after oppressor. Syria, then Babylon, and then Persia, and then Greece, and now Rome. And so in their story, they were in search of a redeemer, a story where they hoped, they had this hope that one day a redeemer would come along and fulfill their hope of being redeemed from all oppression and all brokenness. And then according to verse 19, he came along, Jesus comes along, and he's seen as this powerful prophet, right? Verse 19, he's seen as powerful in word. He's seen as in powerful indeed. He said things no one else had said. He did things no one else had ever done. And they thought this, yes, he's the one. He's going to make our story right. He's the one we've been hoping for to lead a revolution, to overthrow the opposition of our enemy, and to make our people great and prosperous. See, they had all these hopes, and things seemed to be going so well with Jesus. And then all of a sudden, something went south. And the person they put their hope in ended up on a cross. The person they put their hope in just died. And not just died, but again, died on the cross. You got to understand the context here. To them, whatever they were hoping in, it's not going to be found with Jesus dying on a cross. You see, crucifixion is what the Roman Empire did to demonstrate their power over rebels. They crucified people to show their power over rebels. Crucifixion was a brutal way that Rome would say, "We win, you lose. No more hope for this person. Look at him hanging there on a cross." In response to that, these two, Cleopas and his wife, they don't know what to do. So they walk away. They walk away from Jerusalem, away from the cross. They're going back to Emmaus. And then Cleopas continues, and what is more, it's the third day since all this took place, and he's explaining to Jesus what had happened. He doesn't know it's Jesus. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us they had seen visions of angels who said he was alive. So some of our companions, they went to the tomb. They found it just as the women had said. But they didn't see Jesus either. And so these two, they've had their hopes crushed. But now they say this, even on this day, there's been these strange reports. The women went to the tomb, his body, it's not there. They said something about an angel or something, kind of crazy. Something's going on, but we're going home. Look at that. What are they doing? We're going home. We're done. We're going home. Then the stranger says to them, verse 25, how foolish you are and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. That doesn't sound very polite, does it? Like Jesus, like it sounds like Jesus is saying, hello, you dim bulbs, right? Like, hello. That's basically what he says. He's not trying to insult them. Rather, he's trying to open their eyes. You see, they put their hope in a rescuer who they thought was going to operate in a certain way. They said, he's going to look like this. And for a while, he did. And they got their hopes up. But then the cross happened. And they realized that their hope, that their story, wasn't what they thought it was. Right? And this happens to all of us. We think things are going one way, they're going so well, but then something happens. And in one quick moment, you realize you don't understand at all. You're living in a story that seems to be going okay, but then something happens and you find yourself walking down a road you never thought you'd be on. And that's what happens to these two people on this first Easter. They had this story, but then something went wrong according to their story. They end up walking away, walking down a road, distraught and lost. But then this stranger comes up and says, you don't get it. You don't know the full story. And it's killing you because you don't know the full story. So let me tell you, there's one who can explain the story. Verse 25, he says to them, how foolish you are and how slow you are to believe the prophets. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things, then enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he opens up the Old Testament and he walks them through. He explained to them what the Scripture said concerning the Messiah himself. Wouldn't you have loved to have been there for that Bible study? That would have been amazing. Jesus basically says, let me tell you the story a little differently. Then he goes on to tell the story of the Bible. A story filled with joy, right? But also a story filled with suffering and pain and death. And Jesus shows him joy will come. Joy is still possible in a broken world, but this joy comes out of suffering. Joy lives in the middle of suffering. And at the heart of this true story is a suffering God who takes all the weight and brokenness of a wounded world upon himself. Right? That's the story of the Bible. And what Jesus does there is he sits them down and he walks them through the Scriptures and he shows them that the overarching story of the world about the suffering God. He shows them what is said in all the Scriptures about himself. When Jesus first showed up, God's people thought they'd be vindicated. Jesus shows up and they think, great, we're going to have a great army now. We're going to have great wealth and great power and secure borders and restore a vast empire. That's the story they were looking for. Of course, it's the same story that most of our world tries to sell us today, doesn't it? Same story. When you have it all, when you make it to the top, when you succeed, that will vindicate your story. But that never happened for the people of Israel. From the beginning, their story quickly moved to being slaves in Egypt. And when it looks like they get free, then there's this internal mess in their community. And then their story transitions to exile. They're put into exile and their people are suffering. And other nations rule over them, the Syrians and Babylonians and Persia and Greece and Rome. And so God's people, they expect this great story, but instead they experience suffering after suffering after suffering. But then Jesus shows up and their hopes go up. He might be the one who's going to deliver us from political oppression and suffering. And then he also suffers. He suffers greatly on a cross, and it messes up their story they thought they were living in. But then this stranger stops him and says, What if the depths of his suffering actually confirms his identity instead of disproving it like the world thinks? What if the crucifixion isn't Rome's defeat of Jesus, like the world says, but what if it's actually God's defeat of evil and sin and guilt? He explained to them what was said in all scriptures concerning himself. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter in his glory? In other words, what if the entire story, what if the history of the world is all boiled down to this one man suffering and entering into glory when the tomb is empty once it's opened? And I imagine these two are walking alongside this road and they're going crazy. Their minds are starting to open up. They're listening as they walk. They get to the end of the road and they say this to the stranger, verse 28. As they approach the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he's going further. He's like, all right, guys, see you later. But something's happening in them. Something's stirring in them. So verse 20, they urged him strongly, stay with us. For it's nearly evening, the day is almost over. So he went in to stay with them. You know, sir, evening's coming. Would you stay here? Would you come with us and sit with us and eat with us? Then verse 30, when he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and gave it to them. Their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. Then he disappeared from their sight. I don't know what to do with that. I don't. But their eyes were open. Then they asked each other, were not our hearts burning with us when he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures for us? You see, it happened when Jesus broke the bread. Maybe they saw the scars, right? Maybe they saw the scars on his hands that the nails had made. But it happened in brokenness. He breaks the bread with his scarred hands, and then their eyes are open. And they recognize him. Now, can you imagine being there for that moment? Then they saw the whole story of the suffering. And it's not just that God in Jesus suffers, it's also that in Jesus God triumphs, right? They see that Jesus in Jesus God has triumphed over their sin, over their guilt, triumphed over failure, triumphed over confusion, triumphed over regret, triumphed over our problems, triumphed over death. Triumphed over death. Said for you, whatever road you are walking down, whatever darkness you are facing, whatever regret you may carry around, defeat does not get the last word. Sin and death does not get the last word, because this same Jesus who was crucified by Rome didn't say crucified. He was raised up by God, and the greatest act of power in human history, he has risen, he has risen. That's what they saw in this one moment. And this encounter with the resurrected Jesus changed their lives. It changed their story. It changed the story they were living in. That happened 2,000 years ago for these two. And it's a story that's still changing lives today, isn't it? If you let it. If you let it. It's interesting. In the beginning of the Bible, in Genesis, there's this story of a couple named Adam and Eve. And the whole story of sin gets folded into their story. One day they disobey God. They decide to live apart from God, without God, and rejection of God, and do this by eating as fruit. And when they do, there's this very interesting phrase all the way back in Genesis. It says that when they ate the fruit, their eyes were open. That was a horrible opening. Their eyes were open to the possibility of sin. And darkness, and envy, and brokenness, and greed, and hatred, and oppression, and injustice, and apathy, and guilt, and shame, and death. Now they could see heartbreaking things. They had to leave the garden apart from God. Their eyes were open. This is also our story too. Generation after generation, century after century, it's the human condition. Till one day a stranger came, he lived among us, and he died for us, and he conquered death. And then there's this couple walking down this road, wandering down this road. And they receive food that comes from this, the hands of this broken, crucified Jesus. And the exact phrase is used again. Their eyes were opened. Their eyes were opened. I can't think of a better thing to be said about someone. I think about, their eyes were opened. Because of this, they naturally get pretty excited, right? They're pretty excited. This is a pretty big deal. And I love this verse 33. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. Anybody remember from the beginning how far they walked? 7 miles. Think about this. The person they put all their hope in just died on a cross. That's exhausting, right? I mean, going through something like that, that'd be exhausting. Then they walked 7 miles. That's exhausting. Then they encounter this guy who runs them through an Old Testament Bible study, which would be exciting but exhausting. And then they realize he's the resurrected Jesus. That's a long weekend. Right? But this new story, this new revelation, it's too amazing just to sit there and do nothing. They can't. They have a new story. They have a story to tell. And so they get right back up and they walk 7 miles back to Jerusalem. They get right back up, verse 33. They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 who's and those with the 11 assembled together and saying, "It's true, he's risen." Then the two told him what had happened on the way, how Jesus had been recognized by them when he broke the bread. You see, they have now found the true story. And now they enter that story. "It's true, the Lord has risen," they say. That's the story. That's their hope. That's real hope that lasts, isn't it? So, where are you at in your story? Where are you at in your story? I don't know all the ins and outs of your story, but I know this. If you live long enough, you'll have disappointment. I know this. If you live long enough, you'll experience suffering that you never saw coming. And at times you're likely going to find yourself thinking, "Where is God in the story now? I've been hoping, but I've been hurt. I'm now anxious. I feel so alone. I've failed so badly. I gave in to that thing again." We all find ourselves in that story at some period of time. You know, everybody has to choose what story they're going to live in. The world will tell you one story. A lot of people in our world will tell you this story. Go with the success story, right? That's the world say, "Hey, lots of story options. Go with the success story. Be successful. It's about money, power, health, prestige, and status." The problem with that story is that if you live long enough, you die and they put your attractive, successful, wealthy body in the ground. What do you do then? There's got to be something more than the success story, doesn't it? A lot of people in our day will try to tell you, "Oh, there's no big story. There's no meaning. This all happened by accident. You're around a little bit and then you're gone. That's it." The problem with that story is, what do you do with hope? I mean, what do you do with meaning? What do you do with love and suffering? I mean, is my love for my wife and my kids just random carbon coming together and smashing itself and so I have love feelings? Really? That's a story our world will sell. That was a story I used to live in, by the way. I used to be an atheist living in that story. But then 2,000 years ago, sent for 2,000 years, there's been this other story, hasn't there? And for me, one day the stranger came walking up alongside me. I didn't even know he was Jesus. Now I do. He said, "Keith, I'll give you a different story if you want. And I'll give you a better ending." And my eyes were open. 19 years ago. And for 2,000 years, he's been doing this. And he'll do it for you. Folks, you're not here by accident this morning. You're made by God and you're loved by God who cares so about you, more than you can imagine. And your story and my story gets all messed up because our world is all messed up. Because of this problem of sin, of turning away from God, and we can't fix it ourselves. So one day the stranger, he comes, and he lives, and he walks among us, and he said things that no one had ever said, and he did things that nobody had ever done. Then he went to a cross, and it looked like death has always looked. And it looked like that's the end of the story, but then it turns out that when he was dying on the cross, he was dying for you. He was dying for me. And because he was Jesus, because he was God, he didn't stay dead. On the third day, he raised. And then 2,000 years ago, he walks alongside this couple on this road. And he's still doing that today. He's still coming up alongside people this Easter and saying, let me tell you a different story. Let me tell you a different story. And you can be part of this story. Folks, I don't know about your story. Maybe it's going really well. Maybe you know Jesus and you're overflowing with hope today. It's awesome, right? It's a reminder of the hope. It's amazing. Or maybe things aren't going as well. Maybe you know Jesus, but the story doesn't feel like it's having a happy ending right now. It's interesting. This couple on this road, they have known Jesus, right? They are part of his followers. But what are they doing? They're walking away from the cross. They're walking away from Jerusalem. They're trying to put distance between themselves and the cross. Friends, when the story is confusing and discouraging, the last thing you should do is run from the cross and run from God. Instead, you should run to God, press more into his story. And what I love about this is that as this couple is walking away, he doesn't give up on them. Amazing. This couple is walking away, and yet Jesus pursues them, and he joins them, and he draws them out. Friends, maybe your story has taken some turns you didn't think it would take. Maybe your heart is bearing some hurts you didn't think you were going to have to carry. Maybe you're walking down some roads right now you didn't think you were going to have to walk down. Folks, even today, there's a man named Jesus walking alongside you, trying to tell you a different story, a story of forgiveness, of grace, of hope, and courage. And it's an invitation for you and I to be part of this story where you walk by faith and you live in love and you die in grace to be raised up in life forever with God. And so, folks, if you want that to be your story, it can. You just tell him now, like folks have done for the past 2,000 years, God, I want to walk down your road. I want you to be my friend and my Lord. I want to live in your story. I want my story to be your story. So at this point, I'm going to pray. And they're going to respond to this invitation of hope from Jesus. See, and also when these two folks were walking down this road 2,000 years ago, the text says that once they got to Jerusalem, they hung out with their friends. And they told how they recognized Jesus, which was how? Through the breaking of bread. You see, their eyes were open when they came to this reminder of, the actual physical breaking of bread from Jesus, right? Their eyes were open. And so this morning, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to pass around what we call communion now. Church's been doing this for 2,000 years. Because Jesus said, do this. Do this when you gather. And so as we pass these communion elements out, I'm praying our eyes are opened. I'm praying you find hope again. I'm praying if you've lost hope, you find it today in Jesus, like these two followers of his had. I'm praying if you don't know Jesus, your eyes are opened to what's available, to the story and the things he has for you. So just stand. Let's pray. We'll sing some more songs about the resurrection and the hope we have. And we'll take these elements. When you get the elements, you can take them on your own when you're ready. Jesus, thank you so much for the hope we have. God, I will confess that at times my eyes have been closed, at times I've bought into different stories, at times I have wandered from the cross. And you've always been so faithful to come alongside and to bring me back and to initiate. So Jesus, by the power of your Spirit in this room, I pray you would do that this morning. God, I pray for my brothers and sisters in this room who've lost hope. I pray that by the power of your Spirit, their eyes would be opened, their hearts would be opened, and hope would be found in you. They experience the hope and the grace and the love that I experienced 19 years ago when I went from atheist to follower of you, Jesus. That peace and that hope, God, would you open minds? Would you open hearts? Would you open eyes? God, for those of us who followed Jesus for decades, would you open our hearts and eyes again? Let us not be calloused or just kind of nonchalant with the Easter story. You have risen from the grave. You are reigning at the right hand of the Father in glory and in power, and you're coming again. And we say thank you. What a story. What a God. So we say, come and have your way this Easter morning. In your name, Jesus. Amen.